news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
So here we are in Horrorama, and I have the absolute honor to sit with the amazing Jeff Lieberman, director of Squirm, director of Blue Sunshine, director of Just Before Dawn, director of Satan's Little Helper. Now, Jeff.
Remote control.
A moment or two ago, when I was asking if I could do the interview, you said you're sick and tired of doing interviews. You're sick and tired of seeing the same stories again and again. Why is that?
Why am I sick of that? Because it's repetition. It's like I'm sick of listening to myself. First of all, I have a New York, whiny, nasal, droning fucking voice, A. B, I don't want to hear it. So in order to answer questions, I have to listen to myself, so at least I should be saying something new.
Right. So I'm not going to ask you. I have a whole set of questions prepared asking about Squirm. Where did you get the idea? I know where you got the idea from. You got it from your brother.
Right.
He was playing around with electricity.
Right. I can interview you. And where did he get that idea?
He was outside. Oh, it was Boy Scouts.
No, close. It was a magazine. Mm-hmm. It was Popular Mechanics magazine.
The only thing I'll ask you about Squirm, are you surprised that to this day people are so enamored with this movie?
I would say categorically, it's almost impossible to make a better Worms Take It Over a Small Town movie. So, until somebody does, it's what's called evergreen. And you have a whole new batch of kids, and kids see it the same way as you saw it when you were a kid, and so it has that same icky appeal. If it worked for kids 40 years ago, it's going to work for kids today. So it holds up for, when I say kids, it goes all through adolescence. Like Disney.
So who is better behaved on the set, the Worms or Carl Degenhardt?
Carl Degenhardt, I would say. But he was drunk all the time.
I know. That was a story I heard from you about 8 years ago.
Yeah,
that was
the story. That's true.
Is it true you paid him in Jack Daniels?
It was Southern Comfort.
Ah, okay. Yeah. See, my research again is failing me.
Yeah, well, you got to get your alcoholic beverages straight on these things. Very important for the archive.
Well, speaking of mind-altering substances, I want to talk to you about Blue Sunshine.
Right.
Because most people watch this movie, and they read it as a anti-drug parable, anti-LSD. Whereas you intend to make the movie almost as a parody of government propaganda.
Exactly.
Do you want?
Yeah. The government told us, radiation, we're going to have an atomic war with Russia, and radiation's going to make you have three eyes and six heads and grow huge or shrink down like the Incredible Shrinking Man. Scare the shit out of you. Of course, it was all bullshit. The government is always, if you want to bet on the government lying to you, 99.9% you'll be right. So anything that the government point of view is, marijuana, It's addictive. It's a pathway drug. It's a this, it's a that. 30 years later, it's legal and it's a medicinal drug and everything we knew back then. So, they were saying LSD, well, you take LSD and you can jump off a roof and you think you can fly and it damages your chromosomes. And I went, aha, that's bullshit. So it's always funnier to make a movie, for me, satire. You're going to make a movie of the Bible, and you say, well, the Bible is bullshit. What fun is that? But if you actually make a movie of all the bullshit that's in the Bible, that's funny. Right? So that's what I did with Blue Sunshine. I said, what if the government was right? And I was goofing on the fact that now people took it as, oh, he's supporting that point of view. It's an anti... See what I'm saying? And the people that took it that way, fuck them.
Some people also read it as an anti-disco movie.
Yes. Because it happened to be that the guy, he's sensitive to all the people that took Blue Sunshine, like loud sounds, and they were sensitive to loud sounds. So they interpreted that when you turn up the music and this guy freaks out, it was disco music. Because it's a disco. If it was country western music, you would have freaked out also.
Right.
If it was Mozart, turned up loud. But everybody jumped on that. It's like Lieberman knows that disco sucks.
No.
So I take credit for it.
Now, you make no bones about the fact that you were a user of LSD. You were part of the counterculture. You used LSD when it was legal. So you make this movie, which is, again, a parody of government anti-drug propaganda, and it's being read completely different from what you intended. Did that piss you off?
No. No, because there's always somebody that gets it. And then what happens is, it's not up to me to figure out to have people watch it the way I want them to watch it, and then enough people over the years got it, and certainly commentary tracks came about, so I'm basically telling them flat out what I was doing. So then when they go back and watch it, they watch it from the point of view of what I was trying to do, and they actually like the movie better.
Now, a couple of the actors in some of the films have actually gone on to become producers and directors in their own right. Think about Zalman King.
Right.
And
Don Scardino.
Don Scardino.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is this kind of interesting?
Well, I think that they owed everything to me.
Right.
I think that Don, I know this because I'm still close buddies with Don. He said when he watched me directing him in Squirm, he has said to people after, he said, when I watched Jeff doing, he said, well, I can do that. And so I always thought, it's like, if that schmuck can do it, I can do it. You know? But, and same thing with Zalman.
Of course, Zalman King no longer with us, but he was sort of like the king of erotic.
Erotic, yeah.
Or the Wild
and, Orchid. And neurotic.
Erotic and neurotic. Was it neurotic on set?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a lot of LSD on set?
No. LSD on set? No. Never. Never. The only time that I had experience with drugs on a set was just before Dawn, and that's because in 1980, there wasn't a movie being shot in Hollywood that didn't have an on-set connection with cocaine.
Right.
And it was always, I learned afterwards, 99% of the time it was the stunt people, because they would coke themselves up so they wouldn't feel the pain, and then everybody had a per diem, and they would deal to everybody in the crew. So when you watch Just Before Dawn, try to figure out who's whacked out on coke.
Speaking of pain, giving pain, feeling pain, you're a boxer. Is that correct?
I'm not a boxer, no.
No?
But I've done, I'm a fairly well-versed in boxing history, and I made a documentary on HBO on Sonny Liston, which is an Emmy Award documentary, and so that's where my boxing connection comes from.
So if you could punch anyone in the face besides me right about now, who would it be?
One person?
Yeah.
Just one?
Just one person.
It would be a really close tie between the Pope and the guy in Iraq. Who's the Khomeini, the high guy in, the Ayatollah. There's an Ayatollah. It'd be the Ayatollah and the Pope,
right.
And it would just be you guys flip the coin. That would be it.
Well, Jeff, I want to say from one Jeff to another, thank you for giving me your time, and
thank
it's
you.
Been an absolute pleasure.
All right, cool.
It's an absolute honor to be speaking with the one, the only William Lustig, the director of Maniac, Vigilante, Maniac Cop, Hit List, and also head of Blue Underground. I want to thank you for Blue Underground, because...
Well, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, no, because Blue Underground enabled me, as a budding horror fan, to discover a lot of films that I otherwise would have had a lot of difficulty accessing.
Well, that was the intent of the company, was to be the kind of a flip side to Criterion, putting out pop culture films with the same integrity of the way Criterion we put out a Fellini film. We did it with Argento films.
Right. And when someone first starts getting into horror, obviously you start off with the domestics, your Carpenters, your Cravens, etc. When you dig a bit deeper and you start hearing about these madmen from Italy, you know, your Argentos, your Fulcis, what have you, you want to watch those movies, and you can't go to your local Blockbuster to get them. Here comes Blue Underground releasing these fantastic movies.
Well, I started with the European films because those are the films that were harder to find and were films that were closest to me. Those are the films that inspired me, and I was hoping would inspire others.
What would you say is your absolute favorite Italian horror film? I think I know the answer to that, but...
I mean, I think there's been so many that I really like. I love Zombie. I love Deep Red. I think City of the Living Dead is really beautiful film. House by the Cemetery, those kind of films.
Now, of course, one of our mutual favorite films, Chris and myself, is Maniac. Maniac is a film, how would you describe it, Chris?
Oh, just beautifully lurid. And I watched it because of Leonard Maltin. He had the shitty guidebook, and it said, boom. And it said, this is Drek, bottom of the movie barrel, sleazy, lurid crap. And I said, I'm seeing that. And I just fell in love with it. It's in my top five horror films of all time.
Well, what's interesting about Maniac is when it first came out, that was indicative of the reviews that we got from all the press. Cut to 20 years later, when we started to re-release it again, the reviews were actually quite complimentary. So it's funny that, it's quite common that B-movies, horror films, are disrespected at the time of their release. I remember Chainsaw Massacre got those same kind of reviews. I remember Good, the Bad, the Ugly getting terrible reviews. And yet, these are the films that endure. Is the genre films. And some of them, you know, it becomes a totally different perspective on them.
I mean, there's so much love about Maniac. For example, you have the sleazy, gritty depiction of New York City back when it was New York City. There's also, of course, the incredible performance by Joe Spinell. What was it like working with Joe on set? How much direction do you have to give him?
Well, actually, it was interesting because it wasn't as though I gave Joe a lot of direction. He really took responsibility for his performance. But what direction I might have given him was more in the form of a suggestion. And he was one of the most open actors I ever worked with as far as taking suggestions and considering them. So it was a great collaboration in that way.
I guess what I want to know is how much of Frank Zito is Joe Spinell and how much is William Lustig?
Oh, I would say it's Joe.
Yeah. There's something incredible about the character because he's so uber sleazy, sweaty, bug-eyed, and yet, maybe this says something about me, he's charming. The man.
Well, one of the things that was interesting is the score by Jay Chataway creates a kind of an empathy
right.
for Joe. which was an unusual approach. It wasn't the expected. And I think that's what's differentiated Maniac from a lot of other films of that period.
And what's amazing about the character as well, I mean, this is a man who, I mean, he cannot be more, I can't even think of the adjective, psychotic, deranged, etc. But yet, when he used to hold it together, for example, approaching Marilyn Monroe's character, he's able to do it. And there's that weird dichotomy of this character that he's falling apart in private, but somehow in public he's able to hold it together.
Well,
I guess that's the hallmark of all serial killers, right? You have two different faces.
Well, you know, the idea was Ted Bundy. That's kind of what we slipped in there. We kind of did a compilation with the character that Joe played of the contemporary serial killers. You had David Berkowitz, which was the murderer in the car. You know, we had, and then we had Ted Bundy, which was represented in the scene with Caroline Monroe, where Ted Bundy was this very charming, very affable guy who did some of the most horrific things.
And another thing that's extremely notable about Maniac, of course, is the effects by Tom Savini, the shotgun blast and all shotgun blasts.
Yeah. Well, it was what it was. It wasn't a real head, of course, but it was a live shotgun. Double barrel, full load. Shotgun.
And from my understanding, it was Tom Savini shooting his own head.
Correct. And if you look very carefully, you'll see that the force of firing the shotgun through a real windshield, not a breakaway, but a real windshield, the force caused him, his legs, when he was in the crouching position, to flip out from under him, where he landed on his back in front of the car. And we weren't expecting it, so there was no panning down there. It was concrete he landed on.
It literally recoiling in horror.
Literally.
Another Tour de Force scene would be the, I guess you would say, Frank's demise near the end, when the, spoiler alert, you know, when the man
comes
to life and came apart. Just unbelievable stuff. In fact, I mean, I guess as a hardened horror watcher, you know, things don't disturb me as much as they used to, but in preparation of meeting you, talking to you, I watched Maniac last weekend, and it got to me. It still has the power to get under your skin, and that's a mark of an incredible
look. Oh, well, thank you.
I also want to talk a bit about Maniac Cop.
Okay.
Because, first of all, you're working from a script by Larry Cohen, and that's a credit right there. And it's interesting because in today's society, do you think a movie like Maniac Cop can be made?
Why not? I mean, at its core, what Maniac Cop is a ghost story.
Right.
It's a story of revenge. My references when I was making Maniac Cop was Lee Marvin and Point Blank and Clint Eastwood and High Plains Drifter. I know you may not see the similarities, but thematically, I felt they were very much alike. It was about somebody who had been screwed over.
Right.
Left for dead, may even be dead, and it's the restless ghost that is back. And that's how I look at those restless ghost stories. And that's how I approach the first Maniac Cop, as a restless ghost story.
Yeah, incredible cast for that. Robert Zadar, Bruce Campbell, Atkins, Lori Landon. I personally am a huge fan of Robert Zadar. Maniac Cop was a movie I think that he was sort of made for.
He was.
And I think the same could be said, I think, with Ghost of Manila as well. I think both actors really, pardon me for saying this, kind of got a bum deal in Hollywood. I think both actors killed him so much bigger.
Well, Joe Spinell was a very well-respected, well-paid character actor.
Right.
The problem with Joe is he self-destructed with drinking and drugs and died way too early. Robin Zadar, I think his physicality kind of limited him in the kind of roles he could do, whereas Joe Spinell was extremely versatile. He could do anything. He was a world-class actor.
And he appeared in some world-class films as well.
Yeah. And what I loved about Joe, it was funny, I watched recently Taxi Driver again. And I just know that when they were shooting on location, remember Bill Maher has this thing. I don't know if it's true, but, anyway, when there were, you know, I could tell, like, when Joe was doing his scene and the phone rang, he didn't stop and say, gee, you know, I can't continue, the phone is ringing. He played it. He would just say, you know, hey, Al, would you answer the phone? You know, he would play it in the scene, and they'd keep going, and it just had a natural, you know, and that's what's great about Joe, is he played, he was in the moment.
And, I mean, you know, we're here at Horrorama, and ostensibly, you're well-known mostly for your horror films, but, I mean, you've directed some great action films, Vigilante, Hit List, with Dan Michael Vincent.
That will be screening, by the way. I don't know where your podcast goes. But Hit List will be screening this Tuesday, the 18th, at the Alamo Draft House in Yonkers, New York.
Awesome.
Oh, no, I just wanted to ask about, like, shooting in New York and stuff, because I know with Maniac Cop, you sort of had to... Yeah.
What's
like
that?
Shooting in New York, and I guess with Maniac Cop, you had to sort of,
Well, Maniac Cop,
get out of there,
we only shot 4 days in New York. The rest of it was shot in Los Angeles. So, but it was doubling as New York.
Yeah, I actually Googled the strip joint and the thing, and it's still there in Hollywood, I guess, the bar that they're...
No, the strip club.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait a second. I know which one you're talking about. In the first Maniac Cop.
Yes, yes.
When they're outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in North Hollywood.
Yeah, that's the kind of place I almost want to go to.
Well, we didn't shoot inside. We only shot the exterior.
Yeah, true. But still, yeah. And it's just there's something so sad. I don't know when you can't capture a certain... I mean, I'm thinking of, like, Union Square in New York City, where it's like... It's almost like
Times Square.
That, too. But both of them with, like, a prefab pedestrian area.
Right.
Where you have to go sit, and there's nothing natural or organic about...
Well, Times Square is a totally different animal than it was in the 70s.
So it's a theme park, basically.
Yeah, it's Universal City Walk. It's you know, it's family friendly and Disney-fied.
For sure.
I wanted to thank you. I mean, in addition to the things that you've directed that have had indelible impressions on us, I mean, some of the special features they produced for both Anchor Bay and Blue Underground, it's integral in terms of horror education. So,
well, it was a fun ride doing those. I really enjoyed them.
I know you helped produce a remake of Maniac with Elijah Wood, which I thought was fairly successful. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, what I liked about... Well, firstly, creatively, I chose not to have any impact. No input, I should say, in the film. I really felt that for it to be successful on its own, it had to be I had to relinquish control to Alex Aja, to really do the film that he wanted to do. Not that he would have changed anything if I'd said anything, but it was really just out of respect for his talent not to be involved with that aspect of it. So whatever you like about the movie, it's Alex.
At least you knew it was in good hands. I mean, the guy's like...
Oh, I like Alex a lot. He's a very talented guy.
Reffin from Maniac Cop, I mean, that's amazing too.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what sort of sensibilities he brings, because in this day and age, with, you know, police in the news all the time, I mean, that's sort of what I was hinting at earlier about.
Yeah, it's ready-made with the climate, with Ferguson and all this other stuff going on. I mean...
Well, you see, I've always taken the approach that a movie shouldn't necessarily be a film addressing what's going on in the moment.
True.
I always think it's more interesting if there are larger themes to a film. And so I've always avoided doing, like, inserting political things in the film that would be, you know, it would date the movie.
Right, for sure.
It would date the movie. I like it when it's a much broader concept.
But that's what makes Maniac Cop so successful, is that the subtext is there.
Yeah, anti-authoritarian, that kind of... be wary of them.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's something worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a common thing.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is the subtext is there, but it doesn't hit over the head with it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's there if you want it, but it's not...
But I don't try to be specific to events. I just think it dates the movie. It may be fun. I think it even dates it before it's even released.
Right. William, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure, guys. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah. All right, enjoy the convention.
Thank you for coming to Horrorama.
Toronto is wonderful. I love this town.
Here at Horrorama with Greta Greta, star of Demons, Rats, Night Terror, Murder Off, many Italian horror movies. You were born in Portland, correct?
Yeah.
So how does a girl from Portland end up starring in all these Italian horror movies?
Oh, I just went over to Italy when I was very young. I was a model at first, and then I applied to film school. And once I was there for a summer, I just enjoyed the film industry and stayed as an actress.
Now, what was it like? Obviously, you're fluent in Italian words.
Yes.
Back then, were you?
No, I knew a few words. I always liked the Italian language, and I was very into Italian culture. I had grown up seeing Ike Claudius on television, Masterpiece Theater with Derek Jacobi, and I just always loved Italian history, so when I got the opportunity to find a place to start my career, I chose Italy. I had some choices between Italy, France, and Australia, but I chose Italy.
So what's it like being on the set with all these different languages being spoken? You have Italian, set designer speaking something else, Spanish, perhaps speaking English?
Well, I don't know any other way, so
yeah.
That's how I learned how to do it. And everyone isn't talking at the same time, so it doesn't really matter. Like, the person speaking to you is speaking in a language that you know, or you've read the script, so even though they're speaking to you in French, you know what the words mean. Which I think is an extra special way of acting. So I have a pet peeve of people giggling when they see the lips move in a dubbed movie. But I mean, I would like to see other people be in a room with five different people speaking different languages and not only give a performance, give back to that actor what they need. And of course the lips are going to be different. They're speaking five different languages.
Well, speaking of performances, I mean, your performance in Demons is incredible. It's indelible. It basically is a catalyst for the entire movie.
Yeah, I started, definitely. I started, yeah.
So what was it like going out, the makeup, prosthetics, and everything for you? I mean, you're Rosemary.
Yes.
You're in the theater, you get a little cut, all of a sudden, the most incredible transformation.
Thank you. I do have training from New York, and I was very in the method, and, you know, not that I'm the most well-trained in it, but I had just enough of that information of that kind of acting, and I definitely didn't want to let anybody down. I didn't want to let Dario Argento down. I didn't want to let Lamberto down. So I basically took it extremely seriously. It was a paying gig. You don't want to be the one that can't do your job, and you just do it one line at a time and take it seriously. I think there's an idea now that in horror we're all giggling behind the sets, but we're not. You can't really do this stuff unless it's a horror comedy.
Right.
You have to believe it, and that's just an acting rule. Whatever you're performing, you must believe it 100%.
Well, I think the people that say that you're giggling behind the set, they're the ones that don't take the genre seriously. But all of us here at Horrorama, we take it very seriously. And your character, as well as Bobby Rhodes' character.
By the way, I have some trivia. On the day that you're taping this for your podcast, it's actually Tony the Pet's birthday, Bobby Rhodes.
That's true.
His birthday is today. Happy birthday, Bobby!
Happy birthday, Bobby. Exactly. I mean, your character, Rosemary, Tony the Pimp, you guys have gone down to Pantheon. It's the two greatest characters in Italian horror. How does it feel all these years later to be appreciated for?
Oh, my goodness. Like it's Valentine's every day?
Yeah.
You know, people are nice to you every day. It's as if you're getting a bouquet of flowers every day. Somebody writes you. Somebody like yourself interviews you. I'm here in Toronto, Canada, for the first time in my life. Because thank you very much. For films I did, I was barely more than a child. I mean, it's probably about the warmest hug you could ever have.
And you and Bobby are still friends, right?
I'm friends with everybody. Bobby, Dario, Lamberto, everybody.
What was it like working with Lucio Fulci and Murder Off?
I had no problem with Lucio. Most of the things you've heard about his reputation, he could be an angry man, but he wasn't with me. I played Margie, who was the other instructor of the school. There were a couple of the actors that were playing dancers that, you know, thought it was a good idea to talk back, but I knew better.
It's funny because it seems like Lucio's reputation precedes him, but I've interviewed a few people that work with him. They've all had wonderful things to say about him.
It was wonderful. I think most of us that worked with him, and I don't know what it was like after that period, but I mean, most of us knew he had a pretty difficult personal life, and that's why he was upset. He wasn't upset because he's a maniac. A lot was going on, and you can look it up, I don't need to go into it, but a lot was going on in his personal life, and that's what he was so upset about. And that makes sense.
Of course. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you're involved in the stage?
I was involved in the stage. Yeah, very much.
Are you still involved?
Yeah, I do theater, I do commercials, I mean, I do cons, I'm pitching a network television series, I was flown out to L.A. last year. Something's going to happen. I mean, horror's come back, my look could be more than back. I mean, I'm in a lot of talk, something's going to happen.
Well, I gotta say, it's an absolute pleasure meeting you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Hi, everybody, we're having a great time. Wish you were here. Ciao.